I have here in the studio at the moment, you wouldn't believe this, six guys that call themselves the Dust Bowl Cavaliers. Check them out, myspace.com/thedustbowlcavaliers. This is what they sound like. This is a track from their new EP.
Come, ladies and gentlemen, listen to my song. Sing it to your right, but you might think it's wrong. They make you mad, but it mean no harm. It's just about the renters on Penny's farm. It's a hard time in the country, hell on Penny's farm. Now you move out on Penny's farm, plant a little crop of back in a little crop of corn. George Penny come around, got a plan and a plot till he gets himself a mortgage on everything he got. It's a hard time in the country, hell on Penny's farm. Hard to be a renter on Penny's farm. It's a hard time in the country, out on Penny's farm. You meet George Penny when they come into town with a wagon load of peaches, not a one of them sound. You gotta have the money on somebody's check, play your paying for a bush until you don't get a peg. It's a hard time in the country, out on Penny's farm.
Listening to Is Good on killradio.org, and my guest is the Dust Bowl Cavaliers. All six channels up. And let's do introductions. Hopefully that won't take the hour away from us. Who are my guests?
Matt Young here on the bass fiddle. And
John Rosen, five-string banjo.
Ryan Raddatz on the mandolin.
I'm Mark McConville. I play guitar.
I'm Dave Keaton on the snare and brushes.
Corey Rouse, I also play guitar.
Okay, that was much faster than I anticipated.
Yeah,
that's good.
Well-oiled machine.
That's right.
All
right,
let me ask you real quick. Is there a front man to this act?
We all sing and take turns playing the songs and singing the songs. And
writing the songs?
Yeah, sure, we all.
So write. It's a strictly collaborative process?
Yes,
yeah, man.
Pretty much.
So,
yeah. We tend to rehearse at Matt's recording studio garage, so that makes him kind of in charge of the location.
Yeah.
But yeah,
they know they're coming to my turf, and they better watch themselves. Yeah.
How did you guys discover that you were the Dust Bowl Cavaliers? I mean, did you just sort of spontaneously show up, or was there
a party at my house that was a redneck themed party, and everybody came, and we all drank, Schlitz, and ate pigs in a blanket, and wore wife beaters, and we all brought our instruments and had a couple of jam sessions in our garage at the party, and it was very rootsy, redneck country music, and we had a great time doing it. So we kind of expanded on that a little bit and got together a little more regularly and started writing and playing old songs.
And did you each have that sort of thing in your background, that influence of that kind of music? Or were you just trying it out because it was fun for the party?
I did. I'm John, the banjo player, but I've been playing banjo since 78, so I've been playing ever since I was in junior high, so... But off and on. Actually, this is like the first real, band that I've been playing in consistently. I played in a lot of stuff that just kind of dissolved fairly quickly.
This is Matt, and my first concert I remember seeing, I was like 4 or 5 years old, and I saw a bluegrass concert in my little tiny town in Iowa, and it made a big impression on me, and I've always loved the old music. Folksy and rootsy bluegrass and old-timey country stuff is just... It hits you at a really primal level, and it's just fun to play and fun to listen to. So,
all right, we're going to talk ad nauseum about the challenges of doing an act like this in LA, and the kind of adversity that you face, and the kind of obstacles that I'm sure you guys are overcoming each time you play. Why don't we jump into a live song,
sure.
And then we'll chat some more. All right, my guest are the Dust Bowl Cavaliers, and you're listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
This is called What Is a Man?
What is a man if he ain't got money? If he ain't got money, if he ain't got money. What is a man if he ain't got money? If he ain't got money, sweet Lord. What is a man if he ain't got work? If he ain't got work, if he ain't got work. What is a man if he ain't got work?
And so I must keep moving on.
What is a man if he ain't got a woman, if he ain't got a woman, sweet Lord? What is a man if he ain't got a home, if he ain't got a home, if he ain't got a home? What is a man if he ain't got a home, if he ain't got a home, sweet Lord, Lord, Lord?
And so I must go.
What is a man if he ain't got heaven, if he ain't got heaven, if he ain't got heaven? What is a man if he ain't got heaven, if he ain't got heaven, sweet Lord, Lord? If he ain't got heaven, sweet Lord, Lord, Lord.
And so I must keep moving on. In the morning I'll be gone. I'm heading out the yard.
Absolutely. That was fantastic.
Thanks,
guys, for coming in, for cramming into the little studio.
Thanks,
sardines. I'm sure you're getting to know each other a little better.
After this, we're going to play in a camper.
So how long have you guys been together as the Dust Bowl Cavaliers?
A little bit over a year. A little bit over a year, and playing a lot of shows around town. It's been sort of this rocket ship ride. Like, we just started it as fun, and suddenly we're playing a lot, and the response has been great. It's been really fun.
Have you guys toured outside of the LA area, or just hitting all the... What are some of the spots you guys play at?
We play pretty regularly at Molly Malone's here in Los Angeles. We're going to play actually there tonight, Thursday, August 17th, at Molly's for a part of a show called Wizard Finger, which is a comedy and variety show. And they have great like circus-style acts and musical guests and comedians doing monologues. So we're playing in the show a few songs, and then afterwards we're playing a full set. So that starts around...
It's at 9 o'clock, and I might also mention we are also playing a live music in that show for a burlesque dancer.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to be playing a tune that someone strips to. So
Yeah.
To be pretty.
Which is a first, I think, for bluegrass.
Yeah, you know, there's not a lot of stripping in bluegrass.
No,
it's true.
The clothes tend to stay on.
Okay, so you guys have backgrounds... other than in music, though. You guys are all actors, right? Or most of you are, is my understanding.
Yeah, all of us have backgrounds in the like acting world and you know, theater and performing world and stuff. A lot of us do improvisation and stuff, different comedy groups throughout Los Angeles. And
do those two worlds collide pretty well in this kind of music? Is there a lot of performance in it?
Yeah, I think it's sort of our spontaneity that we're used to in our comedy shows, I think, really bleeds over into what we do on stage. You know, we just have a lot of fun, and there's an energy to it that's kind of unpredictable, which is similar to, you know, the improv shows that we do and whatnot. So.
Yeah, when friends comment on the band with to me, a lot of times they'll say, "You guys are a great band, and you're great performers." as if those are mutually exclusive, which right. I don't think they are.
Sometimes but, they are.
It's just interesting that almost everybody that comments on the band that says, I saw you guys at Molly's and you're such good performers and you're a great band.
Yeah, you were playing songs and you weren't staring at your shoes the whole time.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. It pays off.
So that's important, you guys, sort of making the show something worth watching, not just listening to.
Well, and you know, in sort of in the tradition of the old bluegrass bands, you know, they made it a show. They made sure that they were connecting with the audience and you know, checking in with the audience, having some banter and some, you know, some laughs and whatnot, and then playing great music. So we want to make sure that when people come to the show, they just have a really good time and, you know, they're as valuable a part of it as we are. So
what are some of the preconceived notions people have about bluegrass music, and what are you guys doing to kind of not fall into that?
I think we do a mixture of different styles to some degree. I think we do. I like that we sort of play a good amount of really traditional old school bluegrass, and then we also do some older country stuff in a bluegrass style, and then and the crowd tends to enjoy the sort of modern tunes we do in the bluegrass, you know, the modern covers. I like, it's funny that we call those covers and we don't for some reason call the Hank Williams stuff or the Bob Dylan stuff covers.
Sort of like you're allowed to play those songs.
Yeah, like those are covers too, but it's fun to you really mix it up between the sort of the old country, the traditional bluegrass, and the sort of newer, you know, the Ramones and the Flaming Lips and REO Speedwagon stuff.
And also I think, like, you asked about preconceptions that people have. A lot of the soul has really been sucked out of bluegrass, and it's kind of gotten a bad rap over the last few years because there are a lot of like Nashville session guys doing bluegrass records, and there's just no feel to it. You know, there's nothing raw about it. But you got great bands that are sort of old-timey or country crossovers with bluegrass, like a great band from Texas called The Weary Boys and a group called Old Crow Medicine Show. And they're really breathing new life into this great American song form, you know, giving it some guts again, giving it like a real authentic feel. And because a lot of these songs are about, you know, murder and dying and
loss.
You know, loss and horrible
loving and drinking.
Yeah. All the fun stuff.
Yeah, but they come from a very sort of punk rock place, you mm-hmm. know, singing about, you know, pain and the man and, you know, all that stuff. And it's kind of lost its heart, I think, over the years, and we're really enjoying bringing it back to a really basic level and playing, you know, songs in the way that we hope, anyway, that they were kind of intended.
It seems to me that the country music, anyway, and I can't say I've even heard any bluegrass music, you know, on the radio, but country music seems to go along with, there seems to be a lot of politics involved. Do people try to apply a political bent to your music? Do they expect things from you? Like, do they assume, oh, it's country, that you guys have certain views about things, or...
I think you kind of have to come from the place of just what's natural. You sing what you know and what you believe, and if it happens to be political, so be it. But basically, I know Matt's written several of our originals, and they're just about what he's thinking. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there sometimes people will, you know, put stuff onto a song or whatever. There is sort of a flag-waving element to modern country in a lot of ways, and we're not really, you know, into that at all. I mean, we all love our country, but we're not Toby Keith.
Do we? Show of hands.
Who loves
the country? But we're not like, you know, Toby Keith. I think there's a big disconnect between, like, the sort of 80s arena rock-sounding country that's being produced right now and what we're doing, which is just, you know, songs about life and people and struggles.
And I think that's more what we do, is we talk about, like, the human condition versus, like, politics and stuff like that. And I think actually now, I mean, to go kind of on a political bent for just a second, is that there's a little bit, I mean, like, we're talking about times that are depression era and people that are hurting and stuff like that, kind of wondering, how did I get here? And there's a lot of that kind of in the country right now. So I think kind of roundabout ways, people kind of go, yeah, we connect that way. But that's not what we're trying to do. We're just talking about the human condition of it. That's all we're doing.
And sing songs about robots.
Well, that's a perfect segue. We were talking before about covers and trying something new in an old style. Why don't we go ahead and play what I think is just a brilliant cover of Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots Part 1 by the Flaming Lips, as done by the Dust Bowl Cavaliers. And then we'll come back and we'll do some more live stuff. My guests are the Dust Bowl Cavaliers, and you're listening to Is Good on KillRadio.org.
Hey, discipline her body, 'cause she knows that it's demanding to defeat those evil machines. I know that you can beat them, oh Yoshime. They don't believe me, but you won't let those robots eat me, Yoshime. They don't believe me, but you won't let those robots eat me. Those evil natured robots, they're programmed to destroy us, and we've gotta be strong to fight them. So we're taking lots of vitamins, 'cause we know that it'd be tragic if those evil robots win. I know that you can beat them, oh Yoshime. They don't believe me, but you won't let those robots eat me, Yoshime. They don't believe me, but you won't let those robots eat me.
With the Dust Bowl Cavaliers on Is Good on killradio.org. So why did you guys choose Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots as one of the covers on this EP?
I'm a big Flaming Ryan here, mandolin.
I'm a big Flaming
You're
Ryan.
A big Flaming what?
Flaming Ryan. I interrupted myself. And that's what it sounds like.
Priceless.
I was about to say, I'll do the sentences separately. I'm a big Flaming Lips fan. My name is Ryan. I play mandolin. And we were just coming up with, it was one of the first songs we did. We were just coming up with songs, and I had heard actually on I had heard the Lips do a live, real slow version of Yoshimi with just piano.
Yeah, I have that.
Yeah, and it's from, I loved it. And I play a little bit of piano too. And I was playing on piano, and I was like, man, I would love if they could do that like that. What if we could do it with the band? And it was one of the first ones we did, and it's been well received, and it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. It's cool to look it up on iTunes now and see our cover up there on iTunes. So
that's great. So this music is available through iTunes and where else?
And CD Baby.
CDBaby.com. Just, you know, look for the Dust Bowl Cavaliers at CD Baby or iTunes.
Now, this EP is called Volume 1, Sweet Tomorrow. Is there a Volume 2 in the works? Is this the precursor to a full length?
We
are going to do a Volume 2 really soon. We just got some great news, actually. We've been asked to do the Bluegrass Tribute to Tenacious D record from CMH Records, so we're going to start working on that like this week, and it'll be out in time for the Tenacious D movie in November.
Oh, wow, so that's great.
We're doing like 10 tracks on a Bluegrass Tribute to the D.
Wow.
So, yeah, it should be really fun.
How'd you get involved in that? Like, how did they know to come to you?
You know, they found us on CD Baby, actually, and contacted us, and they dug our sound and had this idea for a tribute record, and they thought we'd be good for it. So we went in and met, and it seems like a good fit, and we're going to have it out in November.
Do you think doing covers is an important part of reaching a modern audience? Do you think that really helps?
Absolutely. I think that's sort of where it starts, is people are like, oh, they do a Ramones song in bluegrass style. That's pretty fun. It sounds cool. And, you know, it's kind of a, I wouldn't say a gimmick, but it catches people's attention. And then, you know, we're able to sort of segue into some of the more old-timey songs in our original stuff. And people have really responded to our whole sort of catalog of tunes. So.
Why don't we go into another live tune, and then I want to talk to each of you about why you play the instruments that you play.
Got it. And this song called Darling Corey and features Corey Rouse on the lead vocals and guitar.
Not a coincidence.
You're listening to Dust Bowl Cavaliers, who are my guest on Is Good on killradio.org.
Dig a hole in the meadow, dig a hole in the cocoa ground.
Dig a hole in the meadow,
gonna lay Darling Corey down. Well, the first time I met Darling Corey was on the banks of the deep blue sea. Two pistols around the body and a banjo on the knee. Dig a hole in the meadow, dig a hole in the cocoa ground.
Dig a hole in the meadow,
gonna lay Darling Corey down. Go away, Darling Corey, stop messing with my hair.
Your liquor's ruined my body,
pretty women all through my bed. Dig a hole in the meadow, dig a hole in the cocoa ground.
Dig a hole in the meadow,
gonna lay Darling Corey down. Wake up, Darling Corey, go get me my gun. Well, I'm not a man for fighting, but I'll die before I run. Dig a hole in the meadow, dig a hole in the cocoa ground. Dig a hole in the meadow, gonna lay Darling Corey down.
Okay, I want to ask the lead vocalist for that song, what's different about singing bluegrass than singing, like, to say, a rock song or a folk song? Is there something that you do with your voice? Is there a certain quality that you give to it, or is it just a
Me in particular, I have to, like, fight the vibrato, as you heard all through that song. But I'm, like, I do a lot of musical theater and that kind of stuff. That's how I started acting. When I first came into here, it's you have to throw it all in the nose. And I saw like a bluegrass tribute on PBS, and they made some joke about that, about how you have to sing completely through the nose. I went,
which they usually tell you not to in all other forms of singing.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. And so it's completely pinched and just let it out, you know, versus like trying to make it sound pretty.
And is that a muscle that sort of gets stronger the more you sing?
It is. It definitely is. And it actually, like I'm still doing like musical theater and that kind of stuff, and I have to kind of like, it really is. I have to be in two different mindsets for it.
Switch gears.
I do. It's that's the hardest thing for me, is just trying to get all, just make it as plain as possible. Don't have to make it pretty.
Is the singing a stronger part of what you are in this act?
I would say yes.
Or the guitar playing?
Yeah.
Singing?
I'm like rhythm, but very basic rhythm. We got Mark over here who's just blazes on the guitar. So I'm backing him up, and then mainly I'm just the high tenor on it. So I'm learning some fiddle, but just haven't got to that point where I feel like doing it in front of people.
Okay, Mark, tell me about your experience with the guitar and bringing that into Dust Bowl Cavaliers.
Sure. When I was a kid, I took piano lessons, and from the pastor's wife, and I didn't like it very much. And yeah, no, for real.
Sounds dirty.
But her son would be downstairs with an electric guitar, just wailing, and I was just like, that sounds better. I like that more. I had to teach myself how to play guitar because my parents were like, no, you're going to play piano. And I was like, no, I'm not. So I picked up a guitar and just taught myself. I mean, I grew up wanting to be like Ozzy Osbourne's guitar player. But of course, I ended up here, which I'm very happy with.
You've arrived. You haven't ended up.
Yeah. It's a good fit. I really... I don't know. It's just raw. That's the thing that I like the most about playing this band is it's pretty raw, you know? you can really dig in and just play. And there's something really, like, I leave our shows just going, that was awesome. I loved it. So that's where I stand, gentlemen. All right.
I think one of the things that's interesting about bluegrass is that the drums are not necessarily the only beat producing instruments. So tell me a little bit about drumming for a bluegrass act.
What can I tell you? I guess I sort of come from the perspective of I'm not really trying to play bluegrass so much as playing what sounds good for the song. So usually I pretty much stick to a shuffle beat, which is, you know, which is a 16 beat with the accent. So I do variations on that, and that that pretty much keeps everybody moving, keeps them dancing and on their heels.
Are you keeping up with the rest of the band, or are they keeping up with you?
It's a combination of the two. I always think that really the bass, the string bass, is really probably the rhythm maker. It's the one that really keeps the beat, and then the drums just sort of keep everybody moving.
All right, well, then let's talk about the bass. So, first, this thing is huge. It's taller than you. How did you decide that that was the instrument you wanted to play?
Well, I've played bass guitar since I was like 11 or 12 years old, and I had the opportunity at one point about 10 years ago to buy this particular bass off of a guy who needed rent money. I, you know, bought it.
Man, he must have really needed rent money, man. That's something you don't just give away.
He's been trying to get it back for the last 10 years, but I will not sell. I've just always loved, you know, playing bass guitar, and I love that low rumble, and something that's really satisfying, especially in such simple music as this is for the bass, just keeping the steady tempo and that, you know, playing on the one and the three and really just keeping it moving along.
Do you find that it's kind of a hypnotic thing, like
absolutely.
You sort of go on a journey in the middle of a song?
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. And sometimes we go into, like, big Grateful Dead jams and, you know.
Hours.
Just hours, yeah. I mean, I consider myself the Phil Lesh of the upright bass.
Can you do that? Can you just, like, jam out on a bluegrass tip for a while? Like,
oh, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Light some incense and
keep
just...
Keep taking courses. get the lava lamp going. Yeah, I mean, it's the changes in bluegrass tend to be pretty simple, but it definitely can be really hypnotic to just get in that groove and keep it going. You know, these guys can all take solos till the cows come home.
Okay, so moving on, aside from being a major player in the film Deliverance, what is a banjo?
What is a banjo?
Yeah.
There are two types of banjos. There's a tenor banjo, which is used mostly for Dixieland bands. It's a smaller neck, and there's not a fifth string halfway up the neck like this. And that was like the equivalent of the electric guitar today in orchestras, basically. Before electric guitars were used, it was the tenor banjo, because it cut right through. But five-string banjo is more of a sort of a homemade instrument. It actually came over from Africa back in the 1600s, but then at one point, I think in the 1700s or 1800s, a guy named, I want to say Joel Sweeney, added the fifth string. And the difference between the five-string banjo and the tenor is the five-string is tuned in an open G chord, so it makes it really easy to play, which a lot of people don't realize, but you can do a lot with the banjo without even fretting anything with your left hand, because it's already an open chord. So it's very low maintenance in that sense.
Oh, and you're doing that with one hand,
I'm
see,
just
yeah.
I'm doing this with one hand. The other hand's in my pocket.
Wait, that's not your pocket? Oh, wait a second!
What's this, roll of quarters? Okay, was the banjo always your instrument?
I started playing guitar when I was, like, in the fourth grade. My brother and I started taking guitar lessons. And what happened was I had a bunch of injuries, like, right on top of each other. I broke two fingers in my right hand, and then I broke my wrist in my left hand. So what happened was it really set me back a bit. And my brother continued, and I just kind of, because I had so many setbacks, I just said, you know what, forget it. And I just kind of got lazy and stopped playing it. And then once we moved to California, this is, like, in the eighth grade, I wanted to play the guitar again. I wanted to pick it up because I was watching my brother and he was just going crazy with it. And I went to a music store. I took a bus down Wilshire Boulevard to Ace Music, and I was looking for a banjo, for a guitar book, and I found Mel Bay's Fun with the Banjo, which is basically just a chord strumming book. And I bought that, took it home, and tuned my brother's guitar to a banjo and just started playing chords, not even rolls, but just chords. And then about a week later, my dad bought me a real cheap banjo at McCabe's Guitar Shop on Santa Monica Boulevard.
What is the biggest challenge in playing the banjo? Is it playing quickly, or
biggest challenge?
It seems like a very fast instrument.
The biggest challenge is probably, I think the biggest challenge is, banjo doesn't lend itself so much to melodies because it's all basically licks with roll. So it's very difficult to hum a banjo song. Like, you really can't hum Foggy Mountain Breakdown. So right. The challenge is picking out melodies within a pattern, a roll, or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Ryan, you're a pretty tall guy. Did you pick the mandolin because it makes you taller? Or?
Yeah, it's it's pretty cool. I'm a tall guy with a real tiny little instrument.
You look huge with that thing. Describe for the listeners what a mandolin looks like, how it's different from a banjo or regular guitar.
From a distance, it probably looks like a real tiny guitar, but it has 8 strings and it's tuned like a violin, G-D-A-E, if you will. But it also is fretted, so it's like a violin but with frets. So it's kind of a mix between the violin and the guitar, and that's kind of the place it plays in the band, I think. Well, Matt was talking about playing on the 1 and the 3. I play on the 2 and the 4 of every beat. And, so that's what it is. It's a lot of soloing, and it's a lot of, it's kind of like the lead guitar of the bluegrass band in some ways. And other times, it's really the rhythm. It hangs out with the snare drum, so.
And did you find the mandolin, or did it find you?
My parents and my family used to do this cool thing where they'd give me a different instrument when I was a kid, every year for Christmas, I'd get a different instrument. And when I was 18, my sister got me a mandolin, like a really nice, cheap, like, little mandolin. And I was happened to be working at a camp that summer out in New Mexico, and all the guys there's a lot of guitar players, and there was only one guy with the mandolin, and that was
right.
me. So I realized you could have a place in most bands if you played something different than guitar. So I played guitar and piano up till then, but then that's when I discovered mandolin about the same time I discovered Neil Young, Bob Dylan, and the Rolling Stones, and it just sort of locked in with that sort of old-timey sound that they were in some ways imitating. So
collectively, are these all of the instruments of a bluegrass band? I mean, is there something that you're missing or something that you want to add?
A lot of bluegrass bands have a dobro, which is essentially a guitar which is played, it's sort of turned sideways, and it's played with a slide, and the strings are way high up off the fretboard. Fiddle, of course, too. What else am I missing? That's about it. And a washboard.
Well, screw those guys. Why don't we go into another live song?
Cool. Right on.